PPI.org. Good evening. Thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. If you'd like to be on our email list, you may email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Good evening, Charlene.
Good evening, everyone.
Ha! You didn't think I had you on, did you?
No, I believe in you.
Oh, well, you're one of the few. Tonight we have Dr. Jill Foster. Dr. Foster is the director of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at the University of Minnesota Medical School, and she's really happy to be here, I think.
Yeah,
and she offered to come in. It's great. And we're going to be talking about vaccines and COVID and adults and kids that act like adults or adults that act like kids. Wait, that's a lot of people nowadays. Okay, so thank you, Jill. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, I'm glad to.
You're here with us again, and we always appreciate repeat guests. Last time we talked about COVID, it was right in the thick of things. So for those who didn't join us last time, can you give a quick description about what COVID is?
So COVID is a virus. It's actually a much longer name for the actual virus itself. But COVID is actually the disease that comes from the virus that first came to us in about January of 2020, entered the United States probably then, and has been with us is sort of a nasty bug that comes and then goes away for a little bit and then comes back even stronger.
What are some of the symptoms, and have they changed throughout the time?
They haven't changed much. What they are is it's sort of like a bad flu. It's really prominent in it is coughing and a high fever. And then that usually progresses to having body aches all over. One thing that has changed a little bit is that back in the beginning, we said about half the people that had COVID didn't have any symptoms at all, but were positive for COVID. And now we're getting fewer and fewer of those no-symptom people. And pretty much most people that have COVID these days are having symptoms from it.
So how many different kinds of strains are there now, and are some more contagious than others?
Yes, definitely. We're right now in the Delta. All the strains are named after Greek letters, and we're starting to run out through the Greek alphabet at this point, but we're at Delta. There's about 8 major strains. We started with Alpha, and now we're Delta. There's another one called Mu that's kind of out there in the high horizon that we don't know exactly what that's going to mean for us.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like each one that comes is a little bit more able to pass from one person to another and causes a little bit more serious problems.
Yes, well, we're going to get into those serious problems, but talk about the one thing that I've seen more and more of lately is something called long COVID. And I didn't, you know, I heard about it and I'm like, yeah. But I recently spoke to a real good friend of mine whose entire family got COVID before the vaccine came out. And he has, like, his daughter has just, huge long COVID effects. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and what the effects generally are?
Sure. Well, there's two things that happen after you have COVID. Mm-hmm. So the first is if you're really seriously ill and in the hospital and ICU and a ventilator, which is a pretty big number of people right now, there's all the effects that you would have from any other illness that you were in the ICU, you know, weakness and, you know, damage to the lungs. But COVID is different. This long COVID is really kind of unrelated to how sick you were in the beginning. And even people that just had mild COVID, what we're finding is that there's these effects that linger for months. Being tired, one of the big, like tired. Like you have a day of normal activity and then you have to stay in bed the next day. Not just like, oh, I'm tired tonight. Like I had a hard day.
Wow.
Second thing, it's called brain fog, which is just like you just can't quite get your thoughts together. Like sort of imagine like you were wake up in the middle of the night and would try to process things, you know, out of a deep sleep. It's kind of that kind of thing.
That is so scary to me for somebody who uses my brain for so much and depends on a lot of memory. I always wondered, you know, even in back when this started coming out, like if people are getting this incredibly sick or staying this sick after, what is it really doing inside of us?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I mean, I think this virus is unlike any virus that I've seen before. A lot of people say it's, you know, it's a bad cold or it's like the flu. But you have a bad cold and you have a bad flu, you don't feel bad a month later. But it is really scary. And probably some of the long-term effects are damage that the virus did to you. And the other long-term effects, though, is that your immune system was fighting the virus. And sometimes in fighting the virus, it kind of fights you, too.
So do we know about it much? Do we know, are there studies that are happening with the long COVID people?
Well, they're just really getting started on a big scale. The folks down at Mayo, down the road, have been doing studies and have found, you know, actually have a whole clinical program for it. We're starting to have a program here at the U. A big study just got funded by the National Institutes of Health to really look at people all around the country and be able to, you know, get tens of thousands of people. You know, unfortunately, you know, millions of people have been infected, and so there's tens of thousands of people to look at.
When we talk about the term long COVID, you know, what are we talking about? Is it a month? Is it 3 months? Is it, what is it?
You know, I mean, right now, it could be a year. We're coming up on 2 years. It'll be 2 years in January, and there are people that are still having symptoms. I mean, I had COVID very early in things. I moved here from the East Coast, and it was hard to avoid it if you lived on the East Coast. And one of the things that happened with me, which is kind of weird for COVID, is I lost my sense of smell. Mm. And I still don't totally have my sense of smell back. And, you know, and that's a sort of a long effect of COVID.
Jill, I want to jump to probably one of your favorite topics because you are indeed pediatrics doctor of infectious diseases. And I want to talk about COVID and kids. So let's talk about first, you know, when it first came out, there was this whole, for some reason, it looked like kids just were not being touched much. Not that they never got it. We just didn't see a lot of it. Now it just feels like it's everywhere with kids. What happened?
Well, a couple different things happened. One is that even when we thought it wasn't touching kids, there were, and kids in general didn't have a bad case of it. Mm-hmm. There was something called MISC that came after COVID that a certain number of kids got, a very small percentage, but still not insignificant, who got a really bad inflammatory syndrome that even affected their hearts. And so, but then, like, I don't think people knew about that. People were like, it's not really a big deal. What's happening now, though, is that the Delta virus is so much more transmissible from person to person and is really spreading through the kids. The kids weren't really able to give it to adults that much or didn't even pass it to each other that much in the beginning. But Delta's different. Plus, Delta really does appear to hit kids a lot harder. Talk to colleagues in the South, and the hospitals are just full of kids. And we're starting, even here in Minnesota, we're
have been a little bit behind what's going on in the South, but we're starting to see more severe cases than we've seen throughout the whole pandemic.
So are the symptoms in kids different than the symptoms in the adults?
The symptoms are very similar. Before, they just had milder symptoms, whereas now they're getting more severe symptoms, just like the adults, where they're ending up in the hospital, on ventilators, especially kids that have some other problems, kids that have other illnesses, like kids that have Down syndrome or, you know, might need, you know, to have a ventilator at home. Those kids are being especially hit by this.
So is the contagion in kids different from the contagion in adults?
No, it's probably that the kids caught up with the adults, whereas before the kids didn't seem to pass it as well as adults,
right.
And now the kids are running even with the adults.
I see. Okay, so right now, how common is it? It seems like a lot of kids are getting it now, that they're getting it just as much as the adults. Do I read that right?
Yeah, I think we're seeing that. We saw that in the South, and we're just starting to have our numbers go back up here in Minnesota, and that's what we're starting to see in Minnesota. I mean, there's fewer kids than adults, but we're starting to see it a lot more in kids.
And now we've sent our children back to school.
Yeah, I'm holding my breath on that one. We had the state fair. We met a lot of people mixing with strangers.
I did not go, by the way.
No, neither did I. I was hoping to. I just moved here. But I did not go. So we had a lot of kids. And, you know, and part of it, I think, is kids just aren't as good about keeping their masks on, you know.
Parents. Or distance. You
know, yeah, kids, they don't distance.
Touch each other and they're all over each other.
That's right.
And harassing
the younger
and
ones
pushing
drool.
Each other.
Yep, exactly. And they just, you know, they don't follow directions as well.
Yeah.
Because they're kids. And then now they're back in school. And so, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to talk to parents about, too, is getting masks for kids to make sure that they get a mask that fits their kid right. That the masks are going to be so important, yet I, you know, sort of out in the grocery stores, I have seen a lot of kids with these great big adult-sized masks on. So
since we're on that, I was actually going to ask you, but let's hit it now, because you saw me change from a heavier duty mask to a lighter one to be able to breathe and talk on the microphone, but generally I'm pretty heavy duty.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about masks.
Okay.
And let's talk about, especially because it's hard to find masks with kids. And I'll tell you, I've seen those cloth ones in the grocery store. I just don't feel good about them.
Well, you know, I most of the time wear a cloth mask, but not when I'm at work, you know.
Right.
So I think, you know, the heavy-duty masks are certainly the best. But the heavy-duty masks are also kind of hard. If you wear them right, they should be a total fit to your face so that you're not breathing around them at all.
Right.
So a lot of people wear the heavy-duty ones, but then because they're really uncomfortable, they make them really loose.
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah, that's true.
So it kind of loses its impact. So, you know, you should wear a mask that's the best mask that you think you can tolerate all day and still do your activities. Certainly if I fly in a plane, though, which I try not to do, but if I'm traveling, I put a double mask on. And when I'm at work, I put a double. So I put the surgical mask on, and then I put a cloth mask on over it, and then put it on nice and tight, but not so much I'm feeling strangled.
So what should we do for the kids?
Same thing with kids is you can get masks that are the smaller masks for the kids. You can order them on Amazon. If you know somebody that's a seamstress, that's always the best because you can talk them into making a mask for you, and then you can make it just for the perfect size for your kid, and then, you know, put elastic on it that, you know, adjusts as they, you know, get a little bit bigger. But the mask should, you know, tuck nicely into the chin and should fit firmly around the nose. It needs to have one of the metal piece around the nose, and then go back to, you know, a couple of inches in front of the ears. But I see them either flopping all over, or I see them wearing such a tiny mask that they're hardly even covering their face.
Right. Yeah, my poor son, he's at that teenage stage, and I keep telling him, you have to change masks every day. You have to change masks. And you can see these little rash splotches where the masks, you know, it's like, unfortunately, that's just the oils and everything, but I'm like that. I would think it's a little worse if you repeat wear without washing.
Yeah. If you have a cloth mask, absolutely you should wash it every night.
And so should they double mask?
I think that if you are going to be in a place that has people that are unvaccinated, especially.
School.
Or for me, when I'm at the hospital where there's a lot of sick people,
right.
You should double mask. I really think so. Put a surgical mask on under a cloth mask. Because I think for a lot of women, especially, the surgical masks don't really, they're big and there's a lot of air spaces around them, but the cloth mask over it makes it fit nice and
so
snug.
So surgical masks go first, then the cloth or whatever you're doing.
Yep, exactly.
What about if you're doing like an N95?
N95s that are pretty good. You only need one mask then.
Okay. All right. So let's jump to vaccines. This is a big deal, apparently, everywhere. All right. First of all, I want to start out by right now we've got, do we generally have three? I don't hear a lot about AstraZeneca. There's four technically, right?
Well,
with little branches off of other countries. But I hear Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and I guess technically AstraZeneca's out there.
AstraZeneca is really in Europe.
Okay.
We just really have Moderna, Pfizer, and the J&J. We're expecting one called Novavax to be approved probably pretty soon, I would guess.
So can you talk a little bit about, because Moderna and Pfizer are pretty similar, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
so the difference between with those two and the J&J.
Okay. So the Moderna and Pfizer, you need two of them. They're a new technology that's called this messenger RNA.
And what does that mean?
So messenger RNA is something that's in all of our cells. And it's kind of the code that, if you're thinking about sort of like coding a computer program, it's the code that tells your cell what kind of products to make. So the cell obviously isn't going to have a code in it already to make antibody unless you've already had COVID. And so what we're doing is we're injecting a little tiny droplet that you can't even see with a human eye, a little tiny droplet that has that code in it. The code gets taken up by your cell, and then your cell starts producing the antibody to the spike protein of COVID.
And so then how does the J&J work?
So the J&J is a little bit similar. It doesn't do it through messenger RNA, but what it uses is it uses a virus that's been inactivated, and the virus then carries in a little piece of the a piece that was created in the lab of the that looks like COVID that then the body starts making antibodies to it. So the end result is very similar, but the process is slightly different.
Why is J&J's only one and the other two are two?
The RNA virus one, it really takes two times to really build up enough of the antibody. The J&J one, because it's infecting the cell with the antigen, with the actual the piece of what looks like COVID, it just the immune system is able to be smarter and make the antibody a lot quicker. The problem is that the Pfizer and the Moderna appear to be lasting a lot longer than the J&J. The J&J works quicker, but it seems to be wearing off faster.
So much for the one and done.
Yeah, so much for the one and done.
Yes, and I did notice even at the beginning when we were talking about it, the efficacy, meaning how well it covered you, I think, was different between the different vaccines.
Yeah, the two mRNAs were in the mid-90s, and the J&J was kind of the upper 80s and the low 90s, which, at the time, I remember the very back at the beginning of this, Dr. Fauci was talking about, we'll be happy if we can get one to 70. And so everybody was, dancing around at this, number that was in the 90s.
Right, right. So let's jump for a minute to kids, because it took quite a while. I'm grateful now that my son was old enough to get the vaccine. We got him vaccinated as soon as we could, as soon as it came out. Why did it take so long?
Well, it's always you do adults first. Because if there's going to be, it's good that we do adults first.
Yes.
Because we want to make sure if there is something that pops up that we just don't expect, that isn't found out in the trials, you want to do that on adults before we do it on our children. So that's the first part. And that, you know, we all feel very comfortable that there's no problem there. The other thing is you have to figure out what dose to give the kids, because kids are smaller. And so, but their immune systems are a little tricky. So because the kid's half the size of an adult, do you give half the dose or do they need the full dose? And that's why it's, part of why it's taking so long.
How did they decide that the cutoff was like 12?
Well, that's kind of just traditionally what people have done is we do 12 to 18, and then we do 6 to 11, and then we do 2 to 5.
It's just kind of like one of those. Okay.
Yeah.
And, but now it seems like that it's taken an unbelievable amount of time to get the ones under 12. Is there anything different with that besides the dosage?
Yeah, it's just really figuring out the dosing and figuring out if there's going to be something in these kids that pops up. The same way the kids have that MISC syndrome
right.
that I talked about. You know, people are worried that, you know, maybe you're going to get MISC from the vaccine because it's the recovery from the COVID that led to this. But so far, nobody's seen that. But it's everybody's being just extra careful because you don't want to give a vaccine to the kids to make things better and then actually make things worse.
Can we talk about the vaccine? But, you know, I guess when I got mine, and this happened in my entire family, that either the first or second dose made us sick.
Yeah.
You know, not obviously not sick like somebody who had COVID, but you felt like crap for about a day and a half.
Yep.
And
yep.
then you're like, gone. It was fine. It was like, what just happened? So what was that?
That was your immune system. That was showing that your immune system was producing all the different antibodies. I mean, I think people don't realize that sometimes when they're sick, part of the reason that they feel so crummy is from the actual organism, the virus or the bacteria making them sick, and part of it is their immune system fighting the fight. And just like soldiers fighting a fight, it takes a lot of weapons and exhaustion.
And so what happened to the people that felt like absolutely nothing? Was there a thing there that said, oh, you should be careful because you had no response to the shot?
No, that they were probably, it was just everybody's immune systems are slightly different. One thing we did find is some of the people that had the most severe reactions tended to be people that had had COVID already. So their immune system already had some memory and was reacting.
Interesting.
But you can't say that across the board. You know, some people, like, it's the same with a tetanus shot. Some people get a tetanus shot and they're like, oh my God, their arm is falling off. And other people's like, did I have a shot yesterday?
Right. So what do you think is, I mean, I'm sure there's many things. When I heard that the FDA was going to approve things, you know, or that things were going to be approved, I just kind of shook my head because I knew that people that said, you know, I'll wait till it's approved to get it. No, you won't. You won't get it. Why? What is that?
You know, I think it's that there's something down deep inside all of us that is, you know, like your lizard brain that is saying, don't let a stranger come stick you with a sharp object and inject something into you. And so, you know, you're it's scary. And so, and COVID is scary. So you have to decide which is more scary. And then you got to use logic. You got to use logic and you have to be trusting of the people that are making the vaccines and the people that are making the recommendations of the vaccines. And it's hard to have logic when you're scared.
What is kind of unfathomable to me is that most of us got vaccines or got our shots when we were young. We were immunized.
Yep.
And certainly not every single person, but most of us.
Yeah.
But now there's still a problem. So I guess I want to know, like, do you see this? It feels like we start getting better, and then somewhere, because of whatever it is, you know, maybe it's that they can't afford the vaccine, so that another country, so there, a lot more people are getting sick, and something happens, a new strain pops up, and then it comes all over again. Do you ever see this going away?
You know, I don't think it is going to go away. I think we had a chance for it to go away. In the beginning, everyone said, oh, it's not going to really mutate. And it's shown that it did. People said that it was, people have done sort of the best they could with the information that they had in hand. And the biggest thing I've learned with this is to not try to make guesses about it, because it always ends up fooling you. But I think it is going to change, though. I think it is going to get to a place where it is kind of like the flu. And it is, who really gets upset about, oh, yeah, I got to get my flu shot every year? And I think it's just going to become this thing that we have to manage. But we're in a race, because we need to get it to that manageable place before it mutates much more. Or the more it mutates, the more it is going to be hard to get it under control.
Gotcha. We need to take just another short break, and we'll be right back.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Metro Transit. Metro Transit now offers use of an app that connects blind and low-vision customers to a live agent for navigation assistance during transit trips. More information at metrotransit.org/AIRA.
And we're back. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This is Disability and Progress. I'm here, and so is Charlene, and so is Dr. Jill Foster from the U. We're talking about, let's just say it, all things COVID. I'd like to talk a little bit about breakthroughs.
Okay.
That's a really confusing word, and I feel like it's been misused. I think mostly from the media, it feels like. Can you explain exactly what a breakthrough is?
So a breakthrough is defined as somebody who is at least 2 weeks out from their last shot who still gets COVID. In the very beginning, back before Delta, we had very few. Almost nobody had a breakthrough. And now, and you're right, it is kind of a funny word. And it makes it kind of sound like the vaccine has failed. Now we're in a place that I think two things have happened. One is that a lot of us are more than 6 months out from our last shot. And the other thing that's happened is Delta is such a powerful version of this virus that you need lots and lots of antibody to fight it. And so you need to have the antibody levels that you produced way, way, way up there in that 95% range, not down in a 70% range.
Ah. So my understanding was that breakthrough was like something that it sent you to the hospital, not when you got COVID, but it was bad enough to send. And that really isn't true, is it? A breakthrough is a breakthrough is a breakthrough.
Yep.
It's just if you get COVID, period.
Yep, exactly.
And you've had the shot, then that's a breakthrough.
Yep. We do know that if you have one of those breakthrough infections, you're still much less likely to need to go to the hospital and to be put on a ventilator and to die than somebody who got the vaccine. So you got enough antibody to kind of, beat the virus back a little bit, but you didn't have enough to keep you from getting it.
I know that Delta is the most prevalent one now, mm-hmm. But where did all the others go?
Well, that's the thing, is that, it's sort of like a plant in your garden that takes over. Delta took over and is so much, it became the dominant one that there's just, no uninfected noses for the other ones to plant seeds in.
So when somebody gets the virus, if they go in or get tested, do they test the virus to, the strain?
No, what happens is that the health department is testing a certain percentage of the infections and then using that to judge where we are. They're also especially testing the virus in people that have already had vaccine. So then we can just generalize that to everyone. But it's done at the health department. It's not something to be done at the lab at your hospital.
So if you're tested, you don't know which strain you had.
No, but 98% of the viruses in Minnesota right now are Delta. So you can be pretty sure you got Delta.
So now I want to talk about transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a whole thing about if you're vaccinated for a short time. I actually took my mask off. It was beautiful. And because I thought, I'm vaccinated, I'm good, right? I'm good. If I know I'm around all vaccinated people, we are okay. But then there was the thing that came that maybe you could still transmit it if somebody was infected and you were around them. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I had my mask off in June. Yep. CDC came out with recommendations saying, you know, if you've got grandchildren you haven't seen, take your mask off, go visit them. Those recommendations were all made before we had Delta here. And without Delta, we probably could have gotten away with it as long as you only hung with people that were vaccinated.
Mm.
Unfortunately, not everybody is truthful about being
true,
vaccinated.
Yes.
And I think we also overestimated how safe it was outside.
Mm. Okay, so what happens then? You can still transmit it if you have the vaccine.
If you're symptomatic.
If you're symptomatic. So
yes.
If you have a breakthrough, you can transmit it.
Yes.
But if you were, but can't you be asymptomatic?
Less likely to be able to transmit it. It's not impossible. And one of the tricky place is that when somebody's just kind of coming down with a symptomatic, mm-hmm. they can really transmit. So, like, say you 5 days ago got exposed to somebody and you're, you know, just starting to feel maybe a little achy, but, you know, maybe you had a hard day. But that virus is in your system, you're going to transmit it. And then the next day, you're coughing and have a fever and feel really lousy. But even when you're coming down with it, you can't transmit.
So how common is it to, well, first of all, how common is it to be asymptomatic?
You know, I don't think we know. Before we said 40 to 50% before Delta, and I don't think we know now. But I'll just tell you from my experience, I'm seeing very few tests that are coming back positive in people who have no symptoms.
I see.
They have a lot less symptoms, but I'm not seeing a lot. But then again, it could also be that just people without symptoms aren't getting any tests.
Right. But that's what I think.
Yeah. I think there's still a few of those people out there. But, mm-hmm. you know, most of the people that I'm hearing about are being pretty responsible. So most people are getting tested because someone calls them and says, hey, you know, we had dinner 2 nights ago and turned out I had COVID. Didn't know I did. You need to go get tested.
Right. Let's talk about pregnancy and COVID.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of people are nervous about that. I have seen some kind of rough stuff in the news where mom goes in, has the baby. She's in there for months, comes out. She's gets to hold her baby for the first time. I've seen mom goes in, has the baby, mom dies.
Mm-hmm.
Mom goes in, has the baby, mom, baby die. So how... Talk about a little bit about how this is working. If somebody's pregnant and they do get COVID, what should they do? Is there anything that they should proactively do?
Well, they should immediately call their doctor because there's all COVID in the pregnant woman is much more severe. There's more risk for the woman, just what you talked about. There's more risk that she could even have a miscarriage or that there could be a fetal death. I mean, it's really not at all pretty. But she should call her doctor. She should be extra careful, make sure that she has plenty of fluids. And if she's feeling, you know, like things are getting a little worse, you know, don't do the I'll just go to bed and see how I feel in the morning. Make sure she gets into medical care.
So now let's jump to getting the vaccine. You have so much stuff going on out there, so many myths and everything. I'm guessing you're going to see pregnant women need to definitely get their vaccines, even if they're pregnant.
Yes, absolutely. Good studies have looked at large numbers of women, well, large considering where we are in the epidemic, of women who were pregnant and got the vaccine, and they did fine. They didn't have any more problems with the vaccine than anybody else did, which is so much better than a pregnant woman who gets COVID.
So let's talk a little bit about the myths. Mm-hmm. Where do they come from? I can't even be magnetic and all this stuff. Somebody told me, well, I've had my children, thank goodness. And I said, what does that mean? She's like, you know, you get sterile when you get the... I'm like, what? No, yep. You don't. People wouldn't be getting pregnant then.
That's right.
So I guess I don't understand. First of all, people will believe whatever they're going to believe. But I want you to emphasize that people really need to seek out an ethical source of, you know, news and whatnot, or about the vaccines when they're choosing to believe something. So how do they know, how do they sort out fact from fiction?
Well, you know, some of the stuff just defies sense.
Right.
So the vaccine produces antibody the same way that disease produces antibody. So if the disease produced antibody, so if antibody makes you sterile, then the people that got the disease would be sterile too. And so there's things like that that just, I think if people sort of take down the heat and the temperature and think, does this make any sense? That's one way to help. The other part is to, and again, I talk to how people get scared. Mm-hmm. And so you're scared, and so you want to find, you know, I'm scared of the vaccine, so I'm going to go look for, you know, what are the bad vaccine side effects when you Google? And of course a whole bunch of things are going to come up from a bunch of crazy people that are either trying to sell you something, or they, you know, they just want to be famous because they've come out with something stupid like magnets or the pregnancy fertility mm-hmm. issues. So, you know, if you really are going to be sincere about this, go to a site like the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Medicine, one of those places, and look for something that's a reliable source.
Right. Thank you. So let's talk about, now the big news is boosters.
Yes.
So boosters, what is it exactly?
All right. So that's something... that's something that is just being, it's kind of in the news, and we're trying to figure stuff out. And there's a big group at the FDA that's in fact meeting tomorrow to look at all the data in a very sort of unemotional way. The way I'm looking at it is people should think back to when there's a lot of vaccines that they got their children or that they got themselves that they got like at, you know, the beginning, like hepatitis shot. You get one in the beginning, you get right. another one in 1 month, and then you need another one at 6 months to make it long lasting. And I think what we're finding is that this vaccine is going to be like the hepatitis vaccine, that you need three of them. So I think people need to not think that, oh, the vaccine failed and I need a third shot, but that maybe this is just a vaccine that needs three shots. People who are immunocompromised, though, that's different. Those people are people that just did not make good antibody because their immune system was not working the way it needed to. And so those folks are already getting a booster.
How do you know if you made good antibody or not?
Well, you can have your doctor check your antibody. The problem, even if your antibody is at a good blood level, that tells you something.
And what does that mean? A good antibody would be what?
A number that I can't pull right off the top of my head. But
okay.
When you get the lab result, it'll say this number to this number is a good number.
Ah, okay.
The problem is if your number is low, that doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. Because if you think about it, think of all the vaccines you've had, think of all the illness you've had in your life, you can't be making antibody to all those at all the time, or your blood would be so thick it wouldn't be able to flow through your veins. Mm. So your immune system makes decisions about what things do I make antibody to and what things I might not. And so if you've not been exposed to anybody with COVID since you first got your vaccine back, and I got mine back in December, then my body's going to be smart and not make a lot of antibody right now.
Wow. Do you check your antibodies?
No, I haven't.
I was going to say, you've been a while.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be in line for the healthcare workers that get boosters, which is kind of what we're expecting.
Is it, so what are they saying now? They're saying if you're compromised, certainly you should get a booster.
Yep.
Is it bad if you get just nervous and you think, I'm going to get a booster anyway? Is there anything that can happen bad to you?
No, you know, we haven't done it yet, so we don't know. There's some clinical trials that are going on to try to study it, that the results aren't really back yet. There's a lot of people that say they don't want to do it because there's lots of people in the country, you know, in other countries that don't have vaccine. But you know, right now I'm not particularly sold on that because it's not like if I don't get a vaccine that they're going to take the vaccine that I didn't get and send it to a place that needs it.
No, that's not going to happen. Yes, that is right. I guess I would just wonder if it feels like it's so new, you know, that you're right. How do you completely know? I mean, I think the whole idea is they didn't know how long these shots would last because this is a new thing. So we kind of have to be, well, at their mercy is the wrong word. But, you know, we've got to just listen and trust that they're going to study the right things and give us good advice.
You know, I know some of the people that are on the FDA panel and who are on, one of the people lives right here in Minnesota, and the people that are on the committee that makes the recommendations from CDC, and these are good people. These are good, smart people. These aren't people that, you know, work for the drug companies or have an agenda other than just trying to keep people healthy.
I would like to talk about COVID tests.
Okay.
Because I think there's a lot that came out, and actually... So my son had been vaccinated, and we allowed him to go to camp this summer, and he got sick. And I was a little bit nervous, and so I said, okay, we need to get you tested right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dental office said, we test. In fact, we'll give him a blood test. And they did, and they said, oh, he has antibodies. Did he have the vaccine? And I said, yes. Okay. And they come back and they said, he's negative. So then when I was checking on what these tests were, the blood test was not an appropriate COVID test, my understanding is.
Yeah, that's not what I would have done.
But I didn't know. You know, I thought I was being really good and getting him the test. And I was horrified because I said, oh, my God, I told the camp he was negative. And for all I know, he had it, and I didn't know that. And then all those kids went home, and I was like, I was just, and then other kids came there. I was just really pretty horrified and very surprised that my dentist office misled me. So can you talk about what the COVID tests are and the different kinds and how accurate?
So the test really depends on you get some sort of secretion from your nose or secretions that have been close to your nose. And, you know, your nose connects in the back of your mouth. So there's a swab of your nose. There's a swab deep in your nose, the ones they call like a brain biopsy. And then there's the saliva test, because a lot of what's in your mouth was in your nose and has sort of come down into your mouth.
Nice.
So those tests, the ones that you give and then they get sent away and then they get looked at in a lab, those are really good tests. Now, those are probably going to 98%, 99%, close to 100% of the time are going to tell you, you can go to the bank on that result. The other test is an antigen test that you can get like at the drugstore. That is almost kind of looks like a pregnancy test. It's a little plastic thing. You swab your nose and then you stick into it. That one is okay. It's if you have COVID, it's probably going to show it, but not all the time. Like we did a study looking at it with kids in our emergency room and found out only about 50% of the time was it right.
So, and that's an antigen test?
That's an antigen test.
Okay.
So I think that if you're in a place that you live that it's easy to get one of the molecular tests, the ones that get sent away, those are definitely preferable because those you really can feel you have a lot of trust. And especially in Minnesota, this health department has made it so easy. I've had a test a couple times and you just go down to the airport is one way and you park in the blue garage and the parking is free. You run in, you spit into a tube and 10 minutes later, you're back out again and it's free.
So why do they have the free ones spaced so far, though? Because if you want to find out now, but you don't have transportation to be driving for a long way, you got to pay. And those are not cheap.
Yeah.
So what is going through the minds of...
Well, they're opening up some more test sites so that most people, at least in the Twin Cities, should be fairly close. It's harder for the people that aren't in the Twin Cities, but there's a fair number of sites in the Twin Cities that are pretty close. They were doing it at the convention center. I'm not sure whether that one is still open or not. And then there's some scattered throughout Minnesota. Or you can just go to your doctor. And I think most CVSs, everybody lives near a CVS.
Right.
And most CVSs are still doing the test.
And it's free?
Yes.
Okay.
Just wear your mask while you're waiting in line.
Right.
With the other people getting their tests.
Right. Yes. I think that's a great idea. So if people want to look up, like, the different tests and accuracy and where they can get them and things like that, where could they go?
The Minnesota Health Department has wonderful COVID resources on the website. So just all you have to do is Google Minnesota Health Department and COVID, and you get pages and pages of all sorts of really great resources. On there, they also every day say how many cases we have. There's information on breakthroughs. There's information on who got vaccinated by ages. I mean, it's an incredibly good resource.
Charlene, are you still with me? Maybe she's not with me. Maybe she dropped off.
Yes, I am.
Oh.
I am. I'm here.
I thought you fell asleep there for a minute. How could you? Jill, so interesting.
No, I just was on mute.
Is there anything that you'd like to ask that that you want to know, that you're just dying to know?
Yes. Can people get their flu shots? Is there any impact on getting your flu shots along with the COVID vaccines?
Jill, did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you don't have headphones. Okay, tell me again. Is there any, if people are getting their flu shots?
How does the flu shot work with the COVID vaccines?
Oh, does the flu shot work with COVID
people
vaccines?
People should be getting them.
Yes. Yes, they do. And it's a perfect way to just get both shots out of the way at the same time.
Two for the price of one.
That's right.
And since they probably don't charge you for the COVID shots, it really is two for the price of one.
COVID shots are free.
Right. I see that. Is there any thought of, like, rolling it into one? Could they?
Yeah, I mean, people are very excited about these new mRNA vaccines because it would not be hard to put two or three different vaccines. And one of the things that people are working on right now is a flu vaccine that you'd only have to get every 5 or 10 years rather than having to get a flu vaccine every year, and that you would be able to put a bunch of different things in one vaccine.
But I thought the flu kind of changed from year to year.
It does change. The parts of it that we can immunize people for do change every year. But there are parts that are kind of part of the core virus that don't change every year. Mm-hmm. And so we've never been able to make a vaccine to that. But with the mRNA, we have a possibility of maybe being able to make a vaccine to that core part of the virus.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And in your work, do you do any testing with kids and vaccines and whatnot too?
Yeah, we're doing one right now with the Moderna vaccine with children. We just finished the group of 6 to 11 year olds, and we'll soon be doing the infants and the younger kids.
If people want to get involved with doing testing, you know, how do they do that?
They should look at, there's something called, for the Moderna vaccine at least, there's something called KidCove, KIDCOVE. Just Google that, and then you can get on, you can register to, right now we have a pretty big waiting list of thousands of people because there's been such strong interest in it, but there might be a place where they could get it.
Okay, yeah, well that's good to see that there was interest because, you know, sometimes it's a little, like you said, a little scary. So give me one more time the rundown of places people can go to find out about, you know, the virus, what's real, what's not, the vaccines, and any information they want on it.
So the CDC has very good resources, and they have resources that are written at sort of the level for the general public, and then resources that are written for people with a little bit more scientific knowledge, both of them. There are incredible resources at the American Academy of Pediatrics about COVID and about the vaccine. And then there's my favorite site for vaccines is something called immunize.org, immunize.org. That they've been around forever, and they just have nonpartisan, just it's a nonprofit that just talks about vaccines.
All right, great. Well, Jill, thank you so much for coming back on. And I really appreciate all your information. And I wish us all the best of luck with this thing and hope that someday we will be talking to each other without masks.
That's right. And someday we'll talk to each other about something other than COVID. Although yes. I'm always glad to talk about COVID.
That's true. That's so true. Thank you again.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome.
You just might find that the door you see before you is open wide. Ask, you might receive only those things that you need. 'Cause I believe a better world is drawing near. Children of the earth, no need for hunger or fear. All we need is a bit of hope around.
Joseph, this has been KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This is Disability and Progress. The views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. We were speaking with Dr. Jill Foster from the University of Minnesota. If you want to be on my email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Thanks for listening. Good night.